Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, the CertSecurity.com podcast for July 14th, 2010. In this edition, we talk to Jake Koons of the Open Security Foundation about cloud services security problems. The foundation is starting a new website to track cloud-based services issues.
Realistically, what we're trying to do is just bring some data and some grounded factual information to the cloud security discussion.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. Jake Koons is co-founder and president of the nonprofit Open Security Foundation. He started the widely used open source vulnerability database, which provides security pros with independent technical information on security vulnerabilities. It's become really popular. Interest in OSVDB has grown since it began in 2002, and now the group, made up of about 7 or 8 volunteers, is starting their next project. It's called cloudage.org. And will attempt to track the vulnerabilities, outages, and other issues associated with cloud-based service providers. Jake, hey, thanks very much for joining us.
Not a problem. Thanks for having us.
You've been involved with the Open Security Foundation for quite some time. You actually founded this organization, I should say. The main work has been around the open source vulnerability database.
That's correct.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the success around the open source security or the open source vulnerability database?
So OSVDB is a mouthful to say. So, but yeah, so, you know, if you think back to the times when OSVDB started, it was primarily in response that some of the open community places for security folks to share information were going more corporate. And so OSVDB was launched almost as a direct response to that. You know, we started running the project, and things were going pretty well. And then several people started to say, well, what's to stop my involvement in all this time that I'm, you know, spending and volunteering to OSVDB for you to turn around and sell it? And that's really what led to the founding of the Open Security Foundation. So, the Open Security Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit public organization founded and operated by, you know, information security enthusiasts. And, you know, we set it up in a fashion so that even though OSVDB was the first thing that we did, we set it up so that we could grow, and as the security industry needed additional support or resources, you know, we could be there for that.
Mm-hmm. And you have, what, thousands of vulnerabilities now documented?
In OSVDB, which, you know, it's an independent source for tracking detailed, current, and unbiased technical information on security vulnerabilities. We identify ID numbers in that database based on like a root vulnerability. So where some other sources may group 30 vulnerabilities into one, we try to get down to what is the core issues so that we can get better details and better analysis on it. And last I checked, I think we're 65,000, 66,000 unique vulnerabilities in the database, and it's growing rapidly.
When you hear the term open source vulnerability database, you might think that it's just open source software, but that's not the case, right?
100%. And in fact, we've thought several times about rebranding it. But really, open source was meant to discuss, you know, kind of the framework in which it operates. You know, people can volunteer their time, and it's an open resource for folks to use to improve security. So, yeah. We get that question quite a bit, you know, why do you track just open source vulnerabilities? And, you know, that's not the case. It's just discussing how the project is set up.
And we were discussing before the call, this is all volunteer work, right? And this is stuff that you've got a number of people adding to this database daily or monthly?
So, you know, I mean, I've actually been talking to several people here recently about the huge value of volunteerism and volunteer projects, but you know, I also tell them about the realities of, volunteer work is tough. So, yeah, at the end of the day right now, it's all volunteer-based. But if you think about the, you know, I'll tell you, maybe 10,000-plus accounts and people that we've talked to over the years, it really boils down to about 5 to 8 people that are doing all of the work. And so we're kind of at a time now where we see the value of our work with the OSVDB project, the data loss project, and our new upcoming CloudEdge project. But you know, there's not as many people volunteering and doing the work that you would expect. It's a core group of volunteers that are really doing it all.
Let's start talking about CloudEdge.org. Why is cloud necessarily the next evolution for you guys?
Well, I mean, if you look at the Open Security Foundation, you know, we're primarily data-driven projects. And, you know, our goal and our kind of mission, if you will, is to provide organizations with, you know, detailed information so that they can use that and make appropriate risk management decisions. And so, you know, when it started with vulnerabilities, you know, there was a lack of information, detailed information, and we were trying to empower organizations to properly manage their security vulnerabilities. With the Data Loss DB project, you know, that was really highlighting and bringing to, you know, attention kind of the lack of protection of PII, you know, critical information about customers, et cetera. And so we started tracking that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, and for many people, let me first say the word cloudage probably comes off a little strange. But if you think the word cloud and then outage and you kind of mash them together, we came to cloudage. So mm-hmm. that was the name we landed on. But realistically, what we're trying to do is just bring some data and some grounded factual information to the cloud security discussions. You know, cloud has emerged as a technology and kind of you know, the future, if you will. It depends who you talk to. And most conversations that you have, people love the cloud or they hate the cloud, and it feels very much emotion-based. And CloudEdge is a project that we're looking at to actually bring some data into it so we can have some real grounded conversations.
And you're using a broad definition of cloud in this case, right? I mean, this is basically services that are multi-tenant?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you could get into cloud definition debate for years.
Right.
And we kind of just said, you know, at the end of the day, we may not be perfect in what we're calling cloud, but we're going to break things down into 5 categories that we're going to track, and we're going to look for those multi-tenant things. And kind of the tie-in back to that open-source vulnerability database is early on, we made a decision that we weren't going to track what we called site-specific vulnerabilities. And what we mean by that is, if you know, a company's website, you know, a bank's website had an issue, we weren't going to say, you know, go to this URL, type this, and you know, there's a vulnerability.
Right.
And we thought that was almost, you know, kind of a poor analogy, but getting on a radio station and saying, hey, you know, go to Joe's house. Here's his address, and this is how you break in. And by the way, he's not home, and his lock's not working. And instead, you know, our project was what we wanted to do is make sure that anyone that had, you know, have that lock on their house that has an issue that could be corrected, you know, we were going to provide information about, you know, vulnerabilities and kind of that software that you could have, right? So we said, you know, site-specific vulnerabilities, while we think there's huge value in this, you know, and this is many years ago, it just doesn't feel right at the time. You know, it doesn't feel right to give a direct location of someone and tell them how to break in, if you will. But now, with things are going, and again, definitions we won't get into, whether it's public, private, hybrid, whatever else kind of cloud. In many cases, some of these services now are multi-tenant. So that lock that has an issue at the front door just doesn't affect Joe. It affects Joe and how many other families, if you will. Again, a very poor analogy, but to the point of you want to start understanding some of the security issues in these multi-tenant cloud services, if you will.
I understand the point in actually documenting and having a central location where all of these issues are documented. But, you know, just taking a look at some of the items that are on the site right now, one is a cross-site scripting vulnerability on YouTube. Another is a entry on Twitter suffering outages during the World Cup.
Yep.
And we all know about Twitter's outages for those of us that use it.
Sure.
How useful is the information? How do you see it in terms of being useful? How can it be used?
Well, so to be quite frank, in many cases, we're still having debates around what makes sense to be included and not. And so at this point in time, like I said, we have the five categories, which I'll cover here in a second for you. But even looking at that YouTube one, on the surface, it seemed not like a big deal, right? But then if you start drilling further and you realize now with Google's integration of their accounts, if you can get into a YouTube account, then you can get anywhere else. And so the honest answer is we're still figuring it out. And I think just like a lot of the industries trying to figure out what's going on, again, being a data-driven organization, let's track the data, and then we can slice and dice to figure out what's useful as we move forward. So that's kind of where we're at.
Let's go over those five areas.
Yeah, let's go over the five categories. So the first one is vulnerabilities, and this again is to track more site-specific vulnerability in cloud service providers or online websites that are really not considered software products available for download. So again, these types of things would be issues that would not be tracked in the OSVDB project. So most of the incidents included in here are mostly affect custom software or services. So vulnerabilities is that first one. The next one, and probably the largest one that we see moving forward that people will want to take a look at, is outages. And this includes any unplanned availability or impact to cloud providers. And it's whether the features are unavailable or the whole service is down. So we try to add new downtime as an incident, and where possible, capture the outage duration, and if we have any idea of how large the impact is, where it's number of customers or percentage of a customer base, we'll try to track that as well. So outages, availability issues.
And in some cases, I suppose outages would be even more important than a vulnerability, right? I mean, if a company has, if there's downtime and that means down business time, that could be a problem.
Well, again, I think, there are distinct advantages for cloud solutions, and depending on how an organization deploys cloud, it depends. It's one of those things when you're doing risk management, you need to determine, what's more critical. So if I have, speaking off the top of my head, if I have confidential information in the cloud and there's a vulnerability, well, that may be more than, hey, I lost a connection to a cloud service for 15 minutes. But if I'm using the cloud as a production service, then maybe I care more about the availability. So, for us, we're just trying to capture the data. And then as we start to get more data, just like we've seen with every one of our other projects, we can start to improve it a little better. We can start to get stricter standards and guidelines about what's considered and what's not. And then if you're that organization trying to make a decision about cloud services, then we'll be able to have some real meaningful data to have a conversation and say, this is a big deal, or, people are making a huge deal about nothing right now. So I personally will tell you that I don't think this project is set out to say the cloud is bad or good, one way or the other. It's just be factual information that we can use.
And it's... go ahead.
Well, I was just going to... Let's get through these categories. So the next one is hacks. Again, we spent some time on this, and we figured we'd call it out as a category. Really, when a cloud service provider or online service experience a breach, categorized as a hack, there's no intention here to be a comprehensive web defacement mirror. That's not the intent. But it's really to document high-profile hacks or incidents. The fourth category is what we call autofail. This is a category that tracks quality control features that are delivered to a user's computer via automatic update mechanisms. Most times when I tell people about this category, they start scratching their head, but there's some really good information in here that I think we're going to want to start keeping track of in the future, and that includes even just virus signature updates that break functionality. And we've seen several vendors that are delivering automatic updates that ultimately will cause an outage, large outages to corporations.
Right, and the most public one of recent was the McAfee update.
100%. Yeah. And if you go to the CloudEdge website and you click on incident types, you'll see all of these listed here, and you can just click on autofail, and you'll see the number of them. And in fact, if my memory serves me right, I think it's the largest category we have right now of data, and it's about 40 incidents or so 40 or autofail incidents. It's one of those things that, you know, some folks listening right now or reading something about this might get really angry and says, what the hell does that have to do with cloud? And the answer is we're still trying to, again, as we still try to figure out what cloud is, but this is something that is, you know, delivered, you know, from the cloud, if you will, to machines. And, you know, these problematic updates can cause pretty widespread impact. And in many cases, they're delivered to millions of computers quietly and effectively without kind of any interaction of, yeah, I'll accept that update.
This is more than just anti-malware signature updates, right? I mean, we're also talking like, for example, let's say a failure to of Google Chrome to update properly or something like that.
So we're right now on this one, we're not, again, as where we stand now, we're not saying that an update software didn't update. But it's typically when an update is delivered and that update then causes some type of havoc, whether it's an outage or whatever it may be. So
something breaks. Yeah.
Exactly. So it could be, you know, an operating system update that comes down and causes an issue or some type of auto-update functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this category is right now. I don't think we have an intention of tracking every single piece of software that doesn't auto-update properly and leaves you open. But, you know, again, if there becomes a need for that type of data, you know, we're always open to expanding things. You know, like we've talked about, we know cloud security is important. We know the cloud is going to be an important technology moving forward. And we, instead of having these FUD conversations about, you know, the cloud is awful, don't ever use it, let's have some grounded conversation. So that's where we're at with the autofill one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is data loss. And, you know, this is not meant to be the data loss that we talk about in the Data Loss DB project of, you know, not protecting sensitive or confidential information. This is talking about the unforeseen loss of data or information, meaning poor backups and recovery. So data loss, really, in this particular category, may be around an outage that may be linked, but it's really to highlight the more serious and permanent impact to a customer of, you know, I've got my information in the cloud, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's gone. So this means more data is unrecoverable.
Okay, so that's not, because that's, I guess, could be confused on the surface with hacks. So this is not a malicious intent to steal data. This is just it disappears.
So again, and the categories are where they're at now. We think they make sense. We had a lot of debate on them, but it's not meant. Data loss is meant to be that I have data in the cloud. I rely on it to be there in the cloud. I go there tomorrow. The data's gone. I ask the cloud provider when will it be back, and they say, sorry, it's gone. So, and you know, like I said, you know, some folks that will read that will say data loss and immediately think to our other project, Data Loss DB, of confidential information, but that's not the case in this particular project.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. You know, from your perspective, you are the Director of Security and Network Services, the last I checked, at a specialty insurance company. Is that still the case?
That's pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close. Okay. Talk a little bit about what you think is really going through the mind of a lot of CSOs out there, especially when it comes to having the conversation with the line of business units that are ultimately making the decision to go to cloud in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm an expert in all of this, but I can tell you from my personal standpoint, you know, everyone's trying to do the right thing. Everyone, you know, there's no bad intention, but people are looking for ways that they do things better, faster, cheaper, and the cloud really does provide has some great characteristics that can help businesses scale and meet their business objectives. So, you know, I think from my standpoint and what I've seen in the industry is that there's a lot of pressure to move to the cloud. And in some cases, it might not be the right pressure. It's the next hot thing in the industry, and so we got to get to the cloud. I think cloud is a tool in the tool belt, and it has lots of appropriate uses. And in fact, I kid with a lot of people. We've been using the cloud before it was cool, and we've been using the cloud for a lot of things such as email filtering, spam filtering, those kinds of things. for a long time. And I look at those as cloud services, depending on how you provide it. Now, I do believe that there is a balance, just like every technology that comes out, you know, the people, the process, the technology component has to go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the folks that just say cloud is the savior for everything, you know, that's where I kind of smile and I'll nod a little bit, but I don't think that's the case. I do think there's a lot of folks that are ultimately just scared of the cloud, right, and are kind of not open to looking into it, and I think that's a problem as well. So, you know, I think there's a balance, and CISOs need to be discerning about what they're going to use it for, understand, again, their assets that they're trying to protect. Business need to understand the availability that they expect, and somewhere in the middle of all of that, I think the cloud is a very viable solution, but at the same time, I think we just need to stop thinking that you throw everything in the cloud and all of these security issues that have been there from the beginning of time now suddenly go away. The same security issues are there that we have internally. We just need to figure out ways to manage them. And there's a lot of organizations out there that are working to get some more controls and governance and again, address that people, process, technology components of security in the cloud.
How much sensitive information do you think is winding its way into the cloud at this point, into cloud-based services at this point?
Well, I think everything that I read and when I talk to folks when I'm out there and at conferences and speaking to peers is that there's a lot more than they are aware of. So, you know, IT's always been the service provider to the business, if you will, and have never been able to provide as quick as they like. And cloud does make it pretty easy to get up and running. And so I think folks are finding more and more that there's back doors into the cloud that organizations, you know, again, trying to do the right thing, want to get something done, and they're able to easily spin up something and start doing work in the cloud. And many of the, say, corporate CISOs aren't aware of that. So I think there's more than folks are aware of it. But it is hard to say. I think over the next couple months, as people keep pushing this topic, we'll start to get some better data. But you know, I don't have anything factual or grounded to point to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there really are good sources out there at this point? Figure out what the risks are and gather enough information to make the right decision.
Well, I mean, I think the reason the CloudEdge project came up is that we saw a lack of resources for folks to go to, and you know, we're going to track incidents, if you will, in these categories. But we've also set up some mailing lists that I'd like to mention. You know, you can sign up for just what we call the news mailing list, and it's an announce only of articles and things to keep you in the loop. We have a discussion list that we believe will hopefully get some of these conversations out there for discussion. To have that kind of central point. So, you know, there's the Cloud Security Alliance that's doing some great work to put some security around this and controls, and there's a lot of folks talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't see kind of that very, in the style of Open Security Foundation, kind of that unbiased area to go to have this conversation. So, you know, what I'd say is we've also got some aspirations to make CloudEdge kind of a place for bloggers to come, whether they're anonymous or not. And the reason is that, again, to advance the technology, we believe that having a place for kind of unfiltered dialogue about real or even perceived security issues in the cloud is really required. And without a place to track the information and have this open and honest communication, we won't be able to advance or improve those cloud security initiatives without it. So I think the reason we started the project is we felt like there was a gap, and we're hoping that CloudEdge will bring some place for folks to get data they need to make those decisions moving forward, and also a kind of a place to come together to have discussions around security.
I think you mentioned this briefly a few moments ago, but in a lot of cases, we're hearing that business units are using cloud-based services and CISOs don't even realize it.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme discussed, you know, when I'm out chatting with folks. You know, again, in some cases, you know, it's tough to control that. In other cases, I think that's the age-old issue of, people buying software and, you know, installing it on the network or installing their machines without going through the proper, you know, procedures and whatnot. So, you know, again, I kind of always come back to that, you know, the same security issues and the same components of your risk management program in your organization before we even talked about cloud, they're the same things now that, you know, cloud is here and a real solution for us. So a lot of it just needs to be extended to deal with that. In many cases, you know, from my conversations when I've spoke to folks that have used the cloud or software as a service is really what they call it, is, well, you know, I needed something. IT told me they couldn't deliver. I had to get in the waiting list for some prioritization project approval. This guy told me he could have it to me in 5 minutes. All I had to do was pay him. And, well, I have authority, so I paid him, and it's up and running. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, again, depending upon, you know, the situation, the cloud can really provide some speed to market that, you know, organizations are really wanting. I think it's up to now organizations and CISOs to figure out these guidelines and what's acceptable and what is more, I won't say non-acceptable, but what the higher risks are that they need to be evaluated before they just say, yes, we'll do everything in the cloud, or no, we won't even touch the cloud. There's got to be some balance in the middle that makes sense by organizations.
All right. And we're also documenting or running into compliance issues when it comes to using cloud. And in some cases, it seems like some of the people that maintain the standard or regulations aren't even sure how to address this new technology.
No, I completely agree. You know, again, I won't say the cloud is immature. I think the security industry is still immature. So there's a lot of growing up to do and all these areas, if you will, to address some of these issues. Some, I think, are going to be easily addressed, and it's just going to take us a little time to to come to terms with it. Some are going to be a little bit trickier. But, you know, one that always stuck out in my mind, which I thought was, and you can see the reasons for, but, you know, if you're talking about, say, credit card data and you're under the PCI DSS standards and have to comply with that, you know, standard, they obviously say that you have to have quarterly vulnerability scans. Well, if you go to cloud providers, many cloud providers, or most, or some, or however we want to describe it, won't allow you to do a scan of the platform that you're on for a couple of reasons. One, not really sure which platform you're on because they can move it around as they want. That's some of the, again, advantage for them. But two, you're now scanning multiple tenants. You're not just scanning yourself. So in many cases, there are some distinct things, tried and true practices that the security industry believes is what provides that state of security that we want, that now in the cloud, those kind of controls or scans, you know, are not allowed. So I think there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides about what's realistic and what really are those controls and compliance processes that improve security.
Well, Jake, this has been great. Thanks very much.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. And if you have any other questions, and I encourage anyone who's listening or interested to go out and check out the website. It's, again, cloudage.org. And if you want to help or get involved, we're looking for folks to help us backfill. We're definitely, we're not complete on the data set right now. So, you know, data is only as good as what we have. So I'd love people to get involved and help us out. And if you want to blog or you have some great thoughts about what was said here, whether you agree or disagree, I'd love to have you post it up on the site and let's get some conversation going.
Awesome. Thanks. That was great.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care, Jake. Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.